All right, welcome, everybody. It's kind of hectic around here because our main guy who's usually coordinating stuff like this is missing in action. He's in Spain. So we're going to talk about the plagues, the first nine, to be exact. The last one, I think, we can all agree, it deserves its own lesson. It's so big. But we're going to talk about the first nine plagues, and we're going to look at the plagues themselves, right, and the significances each one might have had, what they meant for the Israelites and, you know, the people who were affected, and what they ultimately mean for us in our everyday context. Obviously, this covers a lot of material, so we're not going to read the whole thing for time's sake. But please be aware, we are on Exodus chapters 7 through 10, so if I make any references to Scripture, you can look there. So the first plague, let's get right into it. The first plague, obviously we all know, the Nile turning into blood. And a thing to note is that it wasn't just the Nile River. It was every surface body of water in Egypt that turned into blood. And obviously, that's really gross, and you wouldn't want to drink blood, so it had a big impact on them. But some things to note about this plague is that the Egyptian magicians could copy this plague. Probably on a more smaller scale, though, and if you want to look at it, it's in verse 22 of chapter 7. If you'll notice how Pharaoh reacts to this plague, it's based on how the miracle could be replicated, right? So the magicians could copy. So the Pharaoh probably thought, oh, it's no big deal. We could do it. This isn't anything too special. So the Pharaoh, obviously, and we're going to see this play out throughout the nine plagues, Pharaoh hardens his heart over and over and over and over again, and we see the first instance here. Keep in mind, also, as we go through, you'll notice the plagues get progressively worse, right? Progressively more devastating than the last. And obviously, this one wasn't lethal. It didn't really directly affect living creatures or people themselves. And there was a way around it. If you look at verse 24, it says that they dug around the Nile River to find water. So the whole surface body of water, that's significant because they could dig around to find fresh water source. So, okay, you know, it's like a little tease, right? We haven't really gotten into like the big ones yet. But you'll see the progression happen. Now, we move on to the second plague. And they're obviously the swarm of frogs, as we all know from our VBS stories. And it was also pretty straightforward. It's enough frogs to cover the land. Magicians, once again, are able to copy this plague, this miracle, and they're able to reproduce it. Some things to notice about this plague is you see the first time Pharaoh initiating negotiations, if you look at verse 8 of chapter 8. However, as soon as the plague is lifted, again, Pharaoh hardens his heart and goes back on the deal that he made, on the promise that he made. That's in verse 15. Again, like the first one, this plague wasn't really lethal. I mean, frogs are super gross. I don't like frogs. I wouldn't touch it. And if you can imagine, not just one or two, but like an entire swarm covering like the inside of your house and like the streets and everything, they're jumping around everywhere. I'll be honest, it's disgusting. But but it's not lethal. It's not life-threatening. So still, maybe unsanitary, but still, nothing too big. We move on to the third plague, and it's the gnats. Moses literally turns the dust on the earth into gnats. And if you know gnats, I mean, Have you ever been outside walking around in a field frolicking and then you run into like a swarm, like a little thing of gnats, and you're like, what the heck? Yeah, those gnats. Again, gross. I wouldn't want to run into gnats for fun. But it's annoying in small numbers, right? Still not as lethal. But if you can imagine an entire volume of just the air filled with those small little flying insects, it goes from a little annoying to kind of, I wouldn't say dangerous, but it's like in between that. So you see this progression. And a significance, this is the first plague the magicians could not copy. If you look at verse 18 of chapter 8, Exodus. And in verse 19, you see the magicians start cracking right before the plagues. You see them start admitting the power of God. They're like, this is the finger of God. This is something that we couldn't reproduce. We couldn't replicate. This is obviously something divine, more than what we can do, what we can conjure up. So you start to see that development there. And with that, you start to see a little divide between the magicians, who would, I would say, are like officials in the Pharaoh's courts, and the Pharaoh himself, right? So the magicians could see that this is God. This is something beyond us. And the Pharaoh obviously hardens his heart again. And we'll see more on that later on in the other plagues. Moving on to the fourth plague. And it's the flies. Kind of like the gnats, gross. A massive swarm of them. Think of the gnats, like what I, you know, how I explained it, but replace it with bigger and more gross and disgusting and disease-ridden creatures, flies. Nasty. So some things to notice. Verses 22 through 23 of chapter 8, you see the first instance of God separating the people of Israel and the Egyptians, right? So God specially protects the Israelites from this plague. You don't see that in the last three, but you start to see it with the fourth plague. And as readers, we can kind of deduce that maybe the plagues are starting to get a little dangerous. Before maybe they could handle, Israelites could, you know, handle being in that plague. But with the swarm of flies, you see God specially protecting them. So maybe we can deduce that the plagues are progressively getting worse and more devastating, and maybe even affecting actual, like, the health of the people or livestock or whatever. So pretty dangerous stuff. I mean, we don't think of flies as like life-threatening, but at that scale and number, and the fact that they're really gross and they carry diseases and all that stuff, pretty significant. So again, Pharaoh hardens his heart as soon as a plague is lifted in verse 32. Moving on to the fifth one. Aren't these transitions really cool? I worked really hard on it. So we see the death of livestock. And really, it's pretty significant. We're so detached in modern society, detached from our food sources, from we don't really use cows and horses for labor in agriculture anymore. So it's kind of hard to grasp. But if you think about it, the people of antiquity, they depended on these animals, these big animals, to do a lot of the labor, right? And these people were also very heavily dependent on agriculture. So for all their livestock to just drop dead one day, the entire nation, that's pretty significant. That would put them in a very, very difficult situation. It's quite devastating. Some things to notice about this one. It's the first plague to directly affect a life of a living creature. God hasn't touched humans yet, but obviously the livestock have died. And again, God makes the distinction between Egyptians and Israelites. And obviously, your livestock dying is not a small ordeal. So God would obviously protect his people. Now, the Pharaoh doesn't even try to negotiate this time. He just hardens his heart on the get-go. And, you can't really blame him. If you're in charge of a nation, if you're the head of a nation, and your entire nation's food source and labor source dies because of this one guy, if I were him, I would see that as an act of war. So we see Pharaoh harden his heart again. So, sixth plague, we look at sores and boils in Exodus chapter 9, verse 8 through 12. Now, no explanation needed, right? This is the first one to directly affect the humans, not just animals, but humans also. Now, the health of the humans. Notice how I said health, not life. We'll see that, obviously, as you know, in the 10th plague, which we won't be talking about tonight. But the health is affected. That's in verse 9. You can read that. Now, the magicians couldn't even stand up against Moses because they were too busy tending to their own wounds, right? They had boils and sores all over their body, so they couldn't even stand up to him. And Pharaoh's heart still hardened after seeing an entire nation's livestock die out, all these flies and gnats and frogs and the blood, and now his people, himself being included, are suffering from these boils and sores, and his heart still hardened. And as readers, we might start to get this idea that this dude is not thinking rationally. There is some sense of irrational pride that's playing a part in the Pharaoh's heart. And you start to see that getting more emphasis throughout the text and as we progress into the plagues. And you also have to realize the plagues played one of the parts or roles the plagues played is it was to gain leverage against the nation of Egypt so that the Israelites could leave without having to wage war or something like that, without a revolution or anything like that. So, really, at this point, Pharaoh's losing. He does not have leverage. I mean, his magicians can't do anything. There's nothing that can save him, yet he still hardens his heart. Something to notice about the sixth plague. So we move on to the seventh plague, and it gets kind of complex. You see some cool stuff happening. So, hailstorm. And a lot of information is given in this section, chapter 9, verse 13 through 35. And you start to see the grand scheme of things. So far, it's just been, oh, this plague happened, this plague happened, this plague happened. Pharaoh hardened his heart, Pharaoh hardened his heart. But you start to see an explanation of why this is happening, why God is using the plagues. God's not just throwing miracles willy-nilly, okay? So notice in verses 13 through 16 of chapter 9, God gives Moses and Pharaoh, subsequently, his purpose behind the plagues, right? So God gives a specific, explicit purpose statement behind these miraculous plagues, besides just rescuing his people, right? There is a purpose behind these plagues. And in verse 20, you see the first time Egyptians fearing the Lord, right, and heeding his warnings. Let's read chapter 9, verse 13. I think it's pretty significant. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Rise up early in the morning and present yourself before Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go.'" Right? That's one purpose of the plagues, "that they may serve me. For this time I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people so that you may know," here it is, "that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth." Right? "For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence and you would have been cut off from the earth. But for this purpose, I have raised you up to show you my power, so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. And we're going to talk more about that at the end. So, a purpose statement. And with the next play, you'll see why the hailstorm was such a brilliant, strategically brilliant placement, I guess, of a specific plague. So with the eighth, you see the infestation of locusts, right? A swarm of locusts. Also, gross, okay, ew. Notice a few things here, okay? God gives his purpose again in chapter 10, verse 1 and 2, but with more focus on the Israelites. God wants the Israelites to also retell the story of how God delivered them with these plagues, how God is mighty and powerful, how he trumped over the Egyptians and the Pharaoh, okay? So that's another focus, another aspect of God's purpose behind these plagues. So what I mentioned, strategic brilliance of the plagues, this kind of proves that God wasn't just throwing plagues around, just whatever, right? Verse 5, if you go there, chapter 10, verse 5, let me read it for you. And they shall cover the face of the land, the locusts, right? So that no one can see the land, and they shall eat what is left to you after the hail, and they shall eat every tree of yours that grows in the field. So the hail, and this is a cross-reference, if you go back to chapter 9, verse 31, and I'll read that to you too. In parentheses, it says, the flax and the barley were struck down by the hail. For the barley was in the ear and the flax was in the bud. Verse 32. But the wheat and the emmer were not struck down, for they were late in coming up. So perhaps something that played a part in the hardening of Pharaoh's heart with the last plague was that there was still a way out, that they still had some kind of food source, right, with the what was it, barley and emmer. Maybe that played a part in hardening of the Pharaoh's heart. But with the eighth one, right, whatever was left, whatever the hail did not get, God sends the locusts and destroys all of that too. So really now they have no food source, the Egyptians. It's devastating. It's strategic. God was targeting Pharaoh and Egypt. Right, he wasn't just throwing these plagues around, throwing these miracles around. He was strategically gaining leverage against Egypt so that they would let his people go. An interesting thing to notice. And really, at this point, you know, Pharaoh is irrational. I think we understand that. He's acting irrationally. His decisions are purely based on pride, right? And we go to the ninth plague, pitch darkness, where you can't see anything. And when I was little, right, and I would, you know, read about the plagues, I would think, why darkness? I mean, that doesn't really, I mean, my room's dark when I'm sleeping. That sounds like three days worth of naps. That didn't really seem like a plague, but think about it. Leading up to this point, the nation of Egypt is in ruins. It's in shambles. They literally have no food to eat. They have no livestock. They have nothing. They're diseased. They're broken out in boils and sores. They need to be in full recovery mode at this point. An entire nation. I don't know if you can really grasp that. I'm having a hard time grasping it too. But think about the United States having been attacked chemically or some way in a militaristic way. I don't know. Some miraculous way. America is in shambles, and it needs to be in full recovery mode. And think about just suddenly the world goes dark, and you can't see anything for 3 days. Can you imagine an entire nation shutting down for 3 days? That's pretty devastating, especially after the first eight plagues. Again, God's not just throwing these around. He's really thinking through. He is strategically targeting Egypt. And Pharaoh tries negotiating in verse 24 and 27 of chapter 10. But notice how he tries to negotiate on his own terms, right? He says, I'll let your people go, but leave your livestock, right? But Moses says, or God says through Moses, no, we're not I'm not doing this by your rules. You're going to play by my rules. You're going to let everybody go and everything that belongs to them. You're going to let my people go, stark free, right? We're not playing games. This is basically what God is saying. And really, he wasn't. And Pharaoh really should have listened to God. Because as we all know, after this ninth plague, is the most devastating one, most deadly plague. And I'm sure you guys will talk about it next week, because we got Horizons next week. So God doesn't allow it. And that really concludes the first nine plagues. And I know you're asking inside, when is this guy going to stop talking so we can eat pizza? And also you're asking, okay, I already knew that. I've read it. I've heard it in sermons. I've been taught in Bible school. I've heard these stories in VBS countless times. So what significance does it have on me today? What am I to learn from this event, this strategic destruction, if you will, of Egypt and the freeing of the people of Israel? So there's really one significant message that I think we really need to get and understand with this whole thing. And that is God's might, right? God is powerful. And reading through the 7 through 10 chapters, and reading through the plagues, you really get that sense that God's not playing around. He is powerful. He demands reverence, and he has the authority. He has the grip on all situations. Even when you're dealing with a powerful nation like Egypt. And by understanding that extent of God's might, his power and his authority, ultimately what we want to really grasp and understand in this is that God is one, that there is only one God, and he is all-powerful, almighty, demands all reverence, whatever, respect, fear. And he has the ultimate authority. Nothing can match God's power. No one can match God's power. We saw in the plagues, right? It was devastating. An entire nation was toppled down in just a couple weeks. And like I said, there were devices used by God, right? And God working through Moses and Aaron to gain leverage so that they could lead the people of Israel out of Egypt. Without waging war, without having to lift one finger. But we also saw in his purpose statements in chapter 9 and chapter 10 that this was more than just some miracle to get these people out. This played a bigger part in God's purpose of proclaiming his own name, his own authority. There were even more to as a testament, played a role of being a testament to God's existence and power shown to not only the people of Israelites or people of Israel, but the Egyptians. So, like I said, each time Pharaoh stood up against God, he was toppled down. God struck him and Egypt down with a plague more devastating, devastating and progressively more destructive and strategically devastating than the last. And to the Egyptians, the Pharaoh represented their gods, right? He was supposed to be like an incarnation of their god or gods or whatever, right? For Pharaoh to be knocked down and put in a helpless situation as he was with the plagues, that is pretty significant, right? And with that, you kind of understand why Pharaoh had a hard time bowing down to God. Why Pharaoh had a hard time not hardening his heart. He stood really for everything Egypt stood for, religiously and politically. So if he bowed down to a foreign god, that means Egypt was a lie. Egypt was built on a bunch of lies and fake gods and religion. God's display of power here was no small feat to not only the Israelites, but to the Egyptians and to Pharaoh. And like I said, the plagues play a bigger purpose than just blowing a hole where Israel can, you know, escape through, right? God is really killing two birds with one stone. He is not only letting the Israelites out, right, delivering them out, but he's also displaying his might, his authority, and his power so that everyone in the world can see. That's the God that exists, and he not only exists, he destroyed an entire nation, and not just any nation, but Egypt. At that time, Egypt was a superpower, right? It was like America. So, conclusion. Within the seemingly straightforward story of the plagues, and we all know the plagues very well. If you've grown up in the church, we've heard of it many, many times. But beneath that lies a more complex play of things. And I think it's kind of cool to see that, to see the brilliance of God, his plan, his purpose behind all these things. Nothing happened by accident or mistake or just by on a whim, right? They were planned and they had a purpose, and we can read about that. And you see on the second point, the plagues were a testament to God's power and his existence to the Israelites and the Egyptians at that time. Now, we can read about it, right? And that plays a role too. But we also have a testament to God's power, a testament to God's plan and his plan for salvation for us, Jesus Christ. And to us, I think Jesus kind of plays the role that the plagues did, or should play the role that the plagues did to the Israelites. As you know, if you read on, the Israelites, after all of this, they still disobey God. They still grumble against God, right? And we might say to ourselves, well, we don't have like devastating, world-destroying, nation-toppling miracles to prove that God exists for us. Well, we do. We have that in Jesus, right? That Jesus was the manifestation of God's greatest might and authority and power and plan for us. And we have that. These people didn't, right? So I think it's important to remember that. And when we read about things like the plague, where God's power is displayed, it's important to remember also Jesus. So really, baptized Christian or not, you know, you need to understand, if you harden your heart against God, God's going to win. God's going to come out on top every single time. And the Pharaoh learned that. The Egyptians learned that lesson. The Israelites learned that lesson. They saw it with the plague. So are you going to harden your heart against God? Right? God is showing you everything you need in Jesus, in these stories, and everything. The Bible has everything that you need. Choice is up to you, really. Are you going to harden your heart, or are you going to obey God? And that can apply to you whether you're a Christian or you're not a Christian or whatever you are. So, whatever you need, right? There are people willing to help. And there are people willing to listen and walk you through whatever you may need. So, if you have a need to respond, please do so now as we stand and sing.